RBS returns to profit for the first time in a decade, and Donald Trump Jr. touts luxury real estate in India.
He's selling these uber luxury flats that are out of reach for the majority of the population.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. One of Britain's biggest banks has made a profit for the first time since it was bailed out by the government during the global financial crisis a decade ago. But could this be a one-off result for the Royal Bank of Scotland? The BBC's Dominic O'Connell reports.
When the taxpayer bailed it out in 2008, Royal Bank of Scotland was the biggest bank in the world, with a balance sheet totalling £2.2 trillion. It's now a shadow of its former self. It has a mere £750 billion in assets, and the cost of shrinking and paying for the sins of the past means it hasn't made a net profit since its rescue. This morning it reported a £750 million profit, the first in a decade. It may, though, turn out to be a one-off. RBS still has to deal with one very big sin from the past, its role in America's subprime mortgage scandal. Analysts expect the final fine from the US Department of Justice could run into billions of pounds, enough to wipe out a future year's profits when the size of the penalty is finally known. Today's results, though, show that RBS is breaking with its past and bring forward the day when the government, which still owns just over 70% of the bank, will be finally able to sell its shares.
Dominic O'Connell. Let's do the numbers. The good news at RBS is being overshadowed as investors send the company's shares down more than 4% over concerns about the bank's involvement in toxic loan selling in the US. Elsewhere, European stocks are lower after markets in Asia ended the week in positive territory. Donald Trump Jr. will meet with buyers in India today to promote his real estate firm's luxury condos. The trip comes as a new report says inequality in India has been rising sharply for the last 30 years. The BBC's Davina Gupta is in New Delhi.
Property experts that we've spoken to have said the real estate projects of the Trump organization here in India have seen at least a 30% uptick in their brand value after Donald Trump became the US president. And according to a report released, $3 million is what they've earned in 2016 from royalty from Indian builders. They have license agreement with at least five Indian builders here and four residential projects, which are uber luxury projects. And today is an important day because Donald Trump Jr. will be meeting buyers of his Delhi projects. He's been trying to sell two luxury towers, which are priced above $1 million.
How significant is the luxury real estate sector in India? Because I believe, actually, India is the Trump real estate firm's second biggest market.
Indian property market has seen a downslide in the past 3 years, especially. You have to understand, India's real estate is a mix of politics and bureaucracy. Often builders do not have enough cash to carry on their projects, and these kind of luxury apartments are out of reach of the common man.
Will this kind of luxury real estate add to charges that India is becoming an even more unequal society? Because I believe Oxfam has a report out saying that India's billionaires, there's about 100 of them, hold 15% of the country's wealth.
What happens to those who can't afford even simple homes? What happens to the infrastructure around such luxury flats where you still have poor roads, poor connectivity? There are water problems, there is electricity problems. So these are basic questions that many are asking. Interestingly, I must add, Donald Trump Jr. did say in one of his interviews that you can go through town, you can see the poorest of the poor, and they're smiling in India. And on the other side, he's selling these uber luxury flats that are out of reach for the majority of the population.
Davina Gupta. It's a busy year for the British royal family, but they're not the only ones preparing for the two royal weddings and a birth. Britain's pottery makers are also hard at work, the BBC's Sarah Matum reports.
The congregation rises as Her Majesty walks in stately procession through the body of the church.
Queen Elizabeth II's coronation in 1953. Many of those watching and lining the streets of London that day would also have been proud owners of a plate or mug to commemorate this special event. But the tradition of buying ceramics to celebrate royal occasions goes back centuries to a time when an image on a cup or plate was the only royal face most people would see in their lifetimes. That's the sound of clay being pumped into the factory at Emma Bridgewater, a ceramics maker based in Stoke-on-Trent. Here in the decorating room, the team will be in full swing ahead of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's wedding in May. And they've already been hard at work producing a mug to commemorate their engagement. I had a look at them with marketing manager Stephanie Woodhouse.
The Harry and Meghan engagement mug has a lovely blue trim around the edge with this very deep red scrollwork and a red polka dot.
These mugs sell for around $27. 40 miles away is the porcelain maker Royal Crown Derby. The company has been making royal memorabilia since the coronation of King George III in 1761. Sales and marketing director Steve Rowley says that pieces relating to the young royals now dominate their sales.
The last really big occasion was the wedding of William and Catherine. We saw a significant spike in the annual sales for the year.
It's estimated that around $308 million was spent on royal souvenirs ahead of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's wedding 7 years ago. Royal events can boost sales for some producers by as much as 10%. So, with a royal baby and two royal weddings this year, 2018 won't just be a big year for the royal family, but a very lucrative one for Britain's potteries too. In London, I'm the BBC's Sarah Machem for Marketplace.
And finally, a state in South India is offering publicly funded breast implants. Tamil Nadu's health minister argued that if the state didn't offer the service, there was a risk people would take out huge loans to pay for the surgery. But critics say state funds are needed for treating disease. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.